The Robber Barons, William Vanderbilt, Part 1, Background. Now, William Vanderbilt, named Billy, was a very different man from his father, the Commodore. He was homely and stout. He believed in routine rather than in inspiration. And he was timid. Until he was 45 years old, William had been relocated to living on a farm on Staten Island. Some say because of his ill health, others because his father thought his son was slow and stupid. Patient and submissive in the face of paternal verbal abuse, William preferred to play the part of the, quote, mistrusted prince, end of quote, rather than miss a fortune of $100 million. Yet he seems to have managed well as a gentleman farmer. His hired men said he was driven. He either sat on a rail fence to watch them work or practiced the habit of suddenly popping up unannounced in the fields to scold them about idleness. The Vanderbilt family historian, Croft, describes how William eventually won over his father's confidence. William used to get his fertilizer from New York City, and one day he got some from his father's Fourth Avenue stables and took it back to the farm. When he saw his father the next day, William asked him how much he would charge for 10 loads of manure. Quote, "What do you give?" end of quote, the Commodore replied. Billy said, quote, "It's worth $4 a load to me," end of quote. His father agreed, having the impression that this was twice what it was worth. The next time Cornelius saw his son with another scow all loaded and ready to head off for Staten Island, he said, "How many loads have you got on the scow, Billy?" "How many? Well, one, of course. One was why there's at least 30 on that scow, Billy." "No, father, I never put that in. I loaded one scow load, $4. He then cast off and headed back to Staten Island. Well, his father was dumbstruck. Sizing up Billy anew and wondering whether he might not make a railroad man like himself after all. So Billy was at last given a small bankrupt railroad in Staten Island to manage. And then when he was almost 50, he was moved into the family business, the New York Central Railroad. Here, William showed himself to be hardworking and methodical. He watched over all details, inspected every engine, oversaw all the books, scrutinized every bill, check, and voucher that passed through the offices of the Great Railroad, even answered all letters in his own hand. Though men and women, as a rule, were, quote, a pretty bad lot, end of quote, and he suspected everyone around him to be in league to take advantage of him. In an age of terrific struggle, such as his father would have reveled in, including contests with which the Standard Oil Party or labor unions, William Vanderbilt was easily frightened and prone to compromise rather than fight to the bitter end. You know, his father would fight to the bitter end no matter what. The significant lesson to be drawn from William Vanderbilt's character and situation was that he succeeded and prospered. The New York Central earned 16% to 22% on its real capital, even during the lean years after 1873. And in 8 years, despite some famous blunders, he doubled the family fortune that his father took 80 years to accumulate. During the brief reign of William, he was harassed by pirates and scammers of the railroad world. No sooner had he acquired the valuable Lakeshore Railroad, leading towards Chicago, than a ring of shifty railroad men began to construct the, quote, Nickel Plate Railroad, paralleling his line to charge the syndicate built the line solely to sell it to Gould or Vanderbilt. They overcapitalized and padded construction costs in the traditional way of railroad bargaining and were soon on their last financing. when William, in fear, bought them out at a king's ransom. Had he waited just one more month, he could have had the railroad at his own terms. Once he assumed its obligations, he saw his error at once and complained for years afterwards over his mistake. In 1883, a similar blackmailing expedition brought another ring or corrupt promoters to the west bank of the Hudson River, building a new line, the West Shore Railroad, in the heart of Vanderbilt country. The financing was as notorious as that of the Nickel Plate and was instigated by opposing capitalists with ties to the Pennsylvania Railroad. Freight rates, passenger fares were low, and so a rate war was on. In the end, William capitulated again and arranged to buy out the ramshackled West Shore just to have peace. The cost of these two defeats was borne in the increase of capital debt as new shares of stocks were issued to pay for the added properties, items which were figured forever in the cost of railroad upkeep, which the public paid for. So even though he ends up getting taken, shall we say, in the end, the public ended up paying for them in the first place. Well, then there's Jay Gould, good old Mephistopheles. Well, he's going to come in to the Vanderbilt game here in our next podcast. So the sources for this are The Robber Barons by Matthew Josephson, America in the Gilded Age by Cashman, The Age of Moguls, The Story of Robber Barons and Tycoons by Holbrook. So I hope you enjoyed that. And as always, don't forget to come by the website, summahistorica.com or historyaccordingtobob.com. Ask a question, leave a comment, check out the CDs, check out the souvenirs. And if you like what we're doing, please feel free to subscribe and support us. Thank you very much.